You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 1 and 2 o'clock this afternoon. Plenty to be talked about. We could literally spend the whole of this afternoon talking about last night's Champions League action. We'll be talking about Tottenham and their loss to Bayern Munich last night. 7-2. 7-2.
7!
7-2. As Len Goodman said, 7! 7-2. How embarrassed are you to be a Tottenham Hotspur fan out there? They may be brave, but they are losers. They don't win anything. Is Mauricio Pochettino gone? Is he going? Where is he going? I think Tottenham fans are starting to get a bit frustrated.
Football is today, it's not yesterday.
We'll also be talking about Manchester City's win against Dinamo Zagreb from last night. They won 2-0. We'll be asking the question about Phil Foden. Pep Guardiola had this weird apology to Phil Foden, wondering what does his future hold? Does he need to follow Jadon Sancho's path and leave Manchester City? We'll also be looking ahead to tonight's action. Liverpool plays Salzburg at Anfield. The first time they've played a Champions League game at Anfield since that incredible night in May, when Liverpool came from 3-0 down to beat Barcelona 4-0, one of the greatest nights in European football history. We'll also be looking ahead to Chelsea's trip to France tonight, taking on Lille, and Ross Barkley yet again in the headlines for the wrong reasons after a late night out in Liverpool on Sunday and a rather weird taxi incident. So that's all to come here on the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon.
7!
So there is only one place to start this afternoon. We'll be looking back at last night's Champions League action, and we are going to be talking about Tottenham. That's all you can do. All you can do is laugh. Well, I don't think if you're a Tottenham fan, you're laughing today. When Heung-min Son opened the scoring at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, they were perhaps looking forward to a great European night. Not so good, was it, for you Tottenham fans out there? A hat-trick, not just hat-trick, 4 goals from Serge Gnabry, who tweeted after the game, "North London is still red." Ooh, he may have been rubbish at Arsenal, but he is still rubbing it in to Tottenham fans. And Arsenal fans, even though he was a failure there, they will absolutely love him for that. Bayern Munich 7, Tottenham 2. Bayern 7! 7! 7-2 to Bayern Munich. Oh my goodness, what a night it was for Bayern Munich. Where did Tottenham go from here? Is it crisis talk? And is Mauricio Pochettino on his way out? I think some Tottenham fans are calling for Pochettino's head. Where does the blame lie? Is it all at Daniel Levy? Is it at the players? Or is it Mauricio Pochettino? I'm sure our next guest will have plenty of views on whose fault it is as a result of that game. Let's talk to Ricky Sachs from Last Word on Spurs. Ricky, Where does the blame lie, and how embarrassing a night was it for Spurs?
Yeah, beyond embarrassing, undefendable, inexcusable, unacceptable. I mean, nothing you can say really to dress that performance up, the manner of it, the lack of desire, the lack of fight. And, you know, the blame is apportioned, I think, to both the players and the manager. You know, Maurizio has been in charge for 6 seasons. It's pretty much the same group. What I will say is that the diamond formation just doesn't work with this group of players. You cannot persist with a formation which doesn't work. So I put that down to Maurizio. But as we know, and it's been very clear that our players at the football club that do not want to be there. And that is the biggest issue at the moment. You've got a Tottenham. We've got a back four. You know, you look at that back four. You've got Jan Vertonghen, who was dropped at the start of the season for selection issues. He's not signing at the moment a new contract. Toby Alderweireld has refused to sign a new contract with the football club. Serge Aurier has come out in the summer and said that there's a lack of competition for his place, and that's why he's still at Spurs. You've then got Danny Rose, they tried to force out on the final day of the summer transfer window. So everywhere you look at the moment in that Tottenham Hotspur squad, there are problems. And that doesn't even start on the midfield. Christian Eriksen publicly has said he wanted away during the summer. So there are numerous issues amongst that squad. It's a painful rebuilding job, which Mauricio Pochettino told us it was going to be. But I don't think it was going to be as torturous as this, to be honest.
Do you think, Ricky, towards the end of that game, that Tottenham perhaps gave up? That it felt like in those final three goals, when Gnabry was sealing that hat-trick and Lewandowski scored, it seemed like it was just a case of, oh, we've lost this game, we're not really going to try. Did that come across to you, that it was a case of a lack of fight towards the end of that game?
100% lack of fight, lack of commitment, lack of desire for the badge. And, you know, it's very hard to defend that. You know, when you see Ndombele go off, and Ndombele had to go off because he wasn't physically fit enough to finish the game. But when he went off, the team collapsed. And I know they conceded four before that, but the three again in quick succession, it happened when the Frenchman went off the field. And Tottenham at the moment, it's very difficult to know what is going on behind the scenes, but it's simply not good enough. And I do feel for Maurizio Pochettino, I do. And I'll tell you why. There's a manager there that has had to come out and defend those players last night on the back of that performance. And to be fair, they should be the ones that come to the media and apologise for that performance. It is simply unacceptable. It's not good enough for Tottenham Hotspur as a football club. Listen, you can accept getting beaten by the better team, but what you cannot accept is getting beaten because of a lack of effort, a lack of desire, a lack of commitment. And that is exactly what happened last night in that last half an hour. I couldn't believe what I was watching. You're watching the team there that for an hour, although Tottenham were 4-2 down, Spurs, they get that penalty and they're back in the game for that moment. But that last half an hour was like watching a completely different game to the hour before that. You know, it is inexcusable to try and defend that last night. And I won't try to, because it's not good enough. And I think the plan now is, when we get to January, is to weed out the players that don't want to be at that football club and actually believe in Mauricio's philosophy.
So how big a crisis, Ricky, are they in? Because Tottenham, it wasn't that long ago, they were knocked out by Colchester in the League Cup. They've now been not just beaten, completely destroyed by Bayern Munich in the Champions League. Their Premier League form isn't superb either, especially away from home. So how big a hole do Tottenham currently find themselves in?
This is the most difficult period in Maurizio Pochettino's management. In the 6 years he's been at the club, I know he said that for him, the darkest period was when he first joined. He had to ship out players that didn't want to be at the football club. Well, he's in a very similar situation here. Players have actually gone public and said they do not want to be at the football club. And what I hope Maurizio does is I hope he goes back to his identity as a manager and sticks by his philosophy. And at that time, when he came to the club, it was about injecting youth players into the team that did want to be at the football club. The likes of Ryan Mason, Harry Kane, Harry Winks. Spurs need to go back to that, I think. We've lost that recently. You know, you've got Oliver Skip coming through, Troy Parrott, Javet Tanganga. There's a lot of youngsters that will play for the Tottenham Hotspur shirt, will be proud to wear it. And I can guarantee you, those players I've just mentioned, if those players were on the pitch last night, you wouldn't be talking about a lack of effort, a lack of commitment. Those players give that to you because they're from the academy. They understand Tottenham in general. And I think that's what we're lacking at the moment. You've got players out there that don't want to particularly be at the football club. And you have to ask, do they really care? Doesn't seem like it on the back of that performance.
For anyone just tuning in, we are here on the Premier League Fan Show. We are talking about Spurs losing 7-2 to Bayern Munich. Is there any way that you can take anything from this game that's positive? I mean, I think if it was the same with any club, I think anyone would be kind of ridiculing if it had been Chelsea, if it had been Arsenal. For so many times, Arsenal were the ones being battered by Bayern Munich 5-1, I think three times on the trot. Is there anything positive that Tottenham fans can take out of last night, or is it one of those nights that is one of the most embarrassing in recent memories?
Yeah, I think, listen, it's very hard when you get beat 7-2 to take any positives out of that, and I'm not going to try to. You know, Ndombele looks good for a period, but he was also at fault for the goals. I don't want to sit here and make excuses. It just wasn't good enough overall. You know, as a team, you know, the formation, you know, this diamond formation just does not work. You cannot continue a formation that doesn't suit the players, especially with players that aren't committed to the football club. Maurizio needs to go back to his roots. Remember the players that at the start of his reign were the performing ones for him, and get back to playing the youth players that actually care about the football club. And yes, that might mean a suffering in results, but I tell you what, you got to get more stuff than that humiliation last night. 7-2. Don't get me wrong, Bayern Munich are a wonderful team. But my God, those last three or four goals, there's just no words to be able to defend that, I'm afraid. No words at all.
So where do you go from here then, Ricky? I've heard over the last few weeks some fans starting to question Mauricio Pochettino. There's no doubt that he's improved Tottenham quite significantly, actually, since he took over 5 years ago, but he still hasn't won anything. How many fans that you've talked to, that you see week in, week out, are starting to question Pochettino? And is it a realistic possibility that in the next few months, either if he gets sacked or if he potentially moves on to another job, is it that Pochettino won't be at Tottenham in the near future?
I don't know the answer to that question right now, if I'm being honest with you. I mean, one thing I will know and tell you about Maurizio, he's a very proud man, and he won't wait for fans of a majority to hand him out the football club. He's got too much class for that. Please bear in mind, this man 3 or 4 months ago took Tottenham Hotspur to a Champions League final and didn't spend a penny for 500 days. And that's not me saying that he's not at fault for some of the things that are happening, because he is. I think Spurs should never have been in a position where they did not spend a penny on a player for 500 days. And it's well known, Maurizio was offered players during that period and he didn't want to sign them. You know, you cannot expect to progress as a football club by not signing a player for two consecutive windows. It just cannot happen. And the squad has gone stale. It needs rejuvenating. It needs fresh energy in there. And we've given ourselves an uphill task to get to January now. We're still 2 or 3 months away from that. And Spurs are in a position where at the moment, it is not good enough as a football club. And I feel for him, because he's got players that do not want to be at the football club. His hands are really tied. Do you play quality players that don't want to be there? Or do you look to the youth? And also, with that lack of experience, does that hinder them? It's a very tricky job for Mauricio Pochettino. For me at the moment, I feel very uncomfortable calling for the manager's head when there are several players there that I think are throwing him under the bus. I think they are not playing for him. And I think it's unfair to put it all on Mauricio. As I've said during this interview, the formation, that's totally down to him. Selection at times, totally down to him. But the lack of effort, commitment and desire, and the individual collective mistakes continuously by this group, is just simply not good enough.
And just finally, Ricky, I wanted to get your views on a comment, a suggestion by Rio Ferdinand last night on BT. He said that next summer Harry Kane needs to leave Tottenham Hotspur. If this is to continue and Tottenham don't get any closer to winning anything, even though you're a Spurs fan through and through, does Harry Kane, this is one of the best strikers in world football, does he need to move on if he wants to go down as an all-time great and go and win things? Or will he take the lead of someone like a Matt Letizia that stays loyal to his club, even if it doesn't mean winning that many things?
I think Harry's Mr. Tottenham. He's got his eyes firmly set on the highest goal-scoring record at the football club. Harry wants to win trophies with Tottenham. He can go and win them elsewhere if he wanted to, but it would mean a lot more to him to win them with Tottenham. It's a club that, you know, he's come through the academy, the way he's grown, the fans see him, and he is the poster boy of the football club. You have to keep these players. But Harry's not stupid. Harry will want to see that the club have got ambition. They have just moved into a new stadium. They've got one of the best training facilities in the world. But that does not mean nothing if you are not performing on the football pitch. And Spurs need to butt their ideas up sooner rather than later and just galvanise this group. It's a big job for Mauricio, a huge job for him. He's been at the club for 6 years, but I do trust him to oversee this period. It's whether the players, it just is how many of them are not really pulling in the same direction. And if it is a big group, then it is a problem for Mauricio. If it is a few that we can get out in the January transfer window and bring players in that do want to play for the football club, then I do believe his time at Tottenham isn't up just yet. It will be a travesty if Mauricio Pochettino leaves Spurs and does not win a trophy. So the amount of work this guy has put into Tottenham, it would be a travesty if this guy does not win some form of a trophy with Tottenham. He deserves it. He really does deserve it.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Ricky. That was Ricky Sachs from Last Word on Spurs. Perhaps portioning more of the blame onto the players that he believes that Pochettino is certainly to blame for some things. He mentioned that the tactics, the formation that Tottenham have been playing isn't right, that diamond isn't working. But he didn't put too much blame at Pochettino. Now, he has done a very good job at Tottenham. They are a much better side, well, not at the moment, but you think about 6 months ago, much better side then than they were when he took over, that he has led them to numerous consecutive Champions League appearances, getting into the Champions League year in, year out, which realistically Tottenham weren't doing 5 or 6 years ago. But, one, he has taken Tottenham as far as this group can go, that they are not good enough to go to that next level, and they have proven that for the last 2 or 3 years. that with the level of investment or the lack of level of investment, they're simply not good enough to move on to that elite level with Liverpool and Manchester City. But two, you have to start questioning Mauricio Pochettino. For all that he's done at Tottenham, he has won absolutely nothing. Cero. He has won absolutely zilch at Tottenham, and no one else would get away with that. That they criticised Arsenal. The Tottenham fans were so scathing of Arsenal for celebrating finishing top four every season and constantly finishing third or fourth and not winning anything or just winning an FA Cup. Tottenham aren't even winning an FA Cup. So for all that criticism that Arsenal were getting, how can Tottenham and Mauricio Pochettino get away with that? There's no doubt that they are a good team. Not the last month or so, but they are a good team and they've done a good job over the last few years, but they are not successful because success, you can only be successful if you win things. And Pochettino has to be questioned. You asked the question who replaces him, but should Pochettino get the sack? There is a very good argument to say yes, he should, but he has not had the support he needed from Daniel Levy to make that step up. Tottenham are aside for the last 4 years that have been regularly getting Champions League football, but with the squad they have now, they are miles away. They are light years away from those top two, as are a lot of the other teams, Chelsea, United, Arsenal. They're light years away from it as well. But you feel like it is probably the end of the line for Pochettino. Will he resign or will he be sacked? That is the big question over the next few months. Tottenham fans, if you have a view on that, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. At Love Sport Radio, we're on WhatsApp. We want to hear your views. Is it Poch out or is it Poch in?
Football is today, it's not yesterday.
Yesterday, all my troubles seem so far away.
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show here on Love Sport with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in contact with us, call us on 0208 7020 558. We'll take a little break from laughing at Tottenham Hotspur after their embarrassing 7-2 defeat against Bayern Munich, and we'll look ahead to tonight's Champions League action. Chelsea are away in Lille, but for Liverpool, it is a home game tonight against Salzburg at Anfield, their first European game at Anfield since that incredible night in May against Barcelona, that incredible comeback win to set up that Champions League final victory against Tottenham. And to look ahead to that game, I'm delighted to say we're joined by Jonathan Higgins, sports broadcaster and journalist. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Jonathan. Do you think there'll be a fantastic electric atmosphere at Anfield tonight, especially considering the last time that the team were at Anfield on a European night, it created one of the greatest nights in the club's history?
Hi, Kieran. Yeah, no, I'm getting even goosebumps just thinking back to that magical night, and it's hard to believe that Champions League football has come around so soon again. I'm not quite sure it's going to still have the same emotive feeling tonight. That game was pretty much one of a kind. It is another chapter in the Liverpool magical history book, but it's not exactly Barcelona opposition. It's the same occasion that we will come to face tonight as Liverpool. It's still going to be a big night. Liverpool, I think, need to make a statement here tonight. It's a little bit of wobble after losing the first game, but European champions back at home in front of their own fans after that night. It's time now to make a statement, and it's going to be a tricky occasion tonight. I don't think this is the foregone conclusion that many people anticipate. Salzburg are, you know, they're very good at attacking team, although their history is maybe akin to the Manchester Cities of this world, where it's changed a lot in recent times. But if you look at their current history, 11 wins over the last 12 games, and most importantly, 55 goals in those 12 games as well. They are goal hungry. Won their opening game 6-2 as well. There's a lot of goals in this team. It's going to be very attacking. They're, make no words, they are going to come to Anfield to attack. They're not going to be too intimidated by the whole occasion. And it's all set up really for the, dare I say, the old cliche, another famous night under the lights at Anfield.
How much pressure do you think, Jonathan, Liverpool are under tonight? You mentioned that opening game defeat away in Napoli, a place where Liverpool did lose last season and went on to win the Champions League. But that they now play Salzburg at home, as you said, who are a free-scoring side that beat Genk 6-2 in their first game. And then it's back-to-back games against Genk. How much pressure do you think Liverpool are under in this game to get a win? And if Liverpool do get a win tonight, will then the group completely kind of open up for them, and then they look forward to those back-to-back games against Genk, where they'll be hoping to get a full complement of points?
Yeah, no, I don't think there's necessarily under pressure on Liverpool. Like, you have to face back Liverpool haven't lost at home in Europe since October 2014. That was against a very different era of Brendan Rodgers' team facing Real Madrid, who were, unlike the current day, were high and flying at the time. I don't necessarily think there's much pressure. Obviously, I think it's imperative that Liverpool get the win. I fancy them to get the win tonight. But the way the fixtures are set up, the double fixture against Genk, without being disrespectful to them, is perfect, really, from a Liverpool point of view, because you can really, Liverpool can really stamp their authority. And I fully expect them to stamp their authority over the next three games. And then it's back to Napoli at home. You probably look at it as the next key game. So it's not all doom and gloom, despite what people want to say. Liverpool are in a very, very good opportunity here. And I fully expect them to just to grasp hold of this group, because it's very much there for the taking.
In terms of then team news for tonight, one blow for Liverpool is that Joel Matip, who's been in outstanding form for 6 to 8 months now, actually will miss tonight's game. He could miss also the Leicester game. How big a miss is he going to be? Because I think sometimes his performances are underrated, playing alongside Virgil van Dijk. But if you look at it on the flip side, it's a good opportunity for Joe Gomez, who was in outstanding form in the first half of last season, to regain his spot in the team, to take this opportunity of potentially a couple of games now to really cement that partnership that he did forge at the start of last season with Van Dijk.
Yeah, it's ironic, really, isn't it, that Joel is just getting the attention now once he's so long. As you said, he's been playing this well for 6-8 months. He's been incredible, really, through the back end of, if you look at the turn of the year where Liverpool, other defenders were falling apart with injury concerns, and he literally came from an injury prone, pretty much fourth choice defender, to becoming the most essential line of the defence, first choice the whole way through, and played magnificent. It's a big opportunity for Gomez. You know, it's not that long ago last season where people were talking about him and the partnership being the best in Europe. Everybody's raving. He's very much a fan's favourite. He's an English international as well, which helps as well in terms of his stature in the game. And it's a big opportunity for him. What I would say is, a couple of times that he's been played, and he's been so unfortunate that he's come in at injuries. And you look at the, I suppose, the away leg in Barcelona is the one that comes to mind straight away with him, where he's had to come in and he's playing out of position in a difficult type of game at right back. He has never really got that run of games in the team. It's a big opportunity for him tonight, and I think if I'm Salzburg, I'm probably going to, you know, focus a lot of the attacks on him straight away. But he's shown enough qualities. He's enough attributes of his game to set in quite well to Liverpool. So it's not as if it's his first time playing alongside Virgil as well. It's a big test for him, more from a personal point of view, but I fully expect him to step up. And the most important thing, I think, in terms of Gomez and stepping back into the unknowns, is that he's going to have Fabinho, who's in red hot form in front of him, is the absolutely enforcer, that tower house in front of him, and he will provide a lot of cover as well. So big night for him personally, but I've not too concerned about him personally.
One man that's not quite yet fit enough for a return to the Liverpool side is Alisson. He is back in training, but Jurgen Klopp ruled him out of tonight's game. Said he could make it for the Leicester game on Saturday, but more likely 100% fit for the Manchester United game post the international break. Looking ahead then to that kind of Saturday game, is it worth that risk? Or would you say, because of the form that Adrian has been in, there is no point in taking that risk? Give Alisson another couple of weeks and you're looking then after that international break for that Manchester United game as an opportunity. And therefore, is Jurgen Klopp going to be quite happy with that situation, that he doesn't have to rush Alisson back in due to the improving form of Adrian?
Yeah, no, Manchester United away was always the game that I'd kind of earmarked for Alisson's return. I think it's a testament, really, to Adrian, how he has settled into this team. And I dare say it almost come to a situation where Liverpool fans and people following Liverpool haven't really mentioned Alisson's absence from the team. He's picked up his form, he's settled into the style of play. Liverpool have slightly tweaked their game plan ever so slightly, just there isn't as many balls going back to him. Look, don't get me wrong, Alisson is one of a kind for me. He's the best goalkeeper in the world, technically, with his feet. He just offers other options that other Liverpool keepers don't give. But how good of a signing has that been? And it's actually a scary, I know Simon Mignolet got high profile again last night in terms of that big save that he made, but from an overall point of view, and I'm talking about all the aspects of the game, particularly with the ball at his feet, it's kind of a damning indicament, really, of himself and Lawrence Carey's, that another keeper has come in to the group, has come in a couple of weeks, been literally thrown in the deep end, and is settling so well, and continued a remarkable run of form for Liverpool, and there's been the odd little wobble here and there, but by and large he's been, even in the Napoli game that we spoke about there, you know, some big saves there. He's settled in, it's remarkable. I wouldn't rush Alisson one bit whatsoever. There's no real point. I think you're going to do more damage in both in terms of potentially risking further injury to Alisson, but also most importantly to the confidence of Adrian. Like, he must be in red hot confidence at the moment. He must feel on top of this world. I don't think there's any necessary to rush him back in, because who knows, a suspension or another injury later on the season, you just don't know how football can turn, that he might be required. And for me, it's important to put from him to keep his confidence up as well. And he's proved an ample step down and then a replacement for him. And I would just let him continue to that international break. He will have more time then to settle in, and we'll go full strength then at Old Trafford.
And just finally then, Jonathan, two men that will know Liverpool's opponents pretty well tonight will be Naby Keita and Sadio Mane, who both played for Salzburg earlier in their career. How much do you think that will help Liverpool tonight, and will they be able to secure all 3 points against the Salzburg side that do boast Erling Braut Haaland, who has 4 hat-tricks already this season's impressive form? Do you think Liverpool will be able to get that campaign up and running today after that opening day defeat against Napoli, and they'll get all 3 points tonight?
Yeah, just a couple of things there. I think a lot has been oversaid in terms of the presence, really, or the experience, the previous experience Sadio Mane and Naby Keita have at Salzburg. That's the football club that has changed a lot. I'm pretty certain there's nobody involved in Salzburg that would have been around at Sadio Mane's time. I think there's only 3, correct me if I'm wrong, from Naby Keita's day. So they are a team that has transitioned quite a while. Obviously, there's a little bit of the culture, etc., but they've changed manager. Like, it's interesting, it's the first American to manage in the Champions League tonight, Jesse March, who's doing quite a remarkable job. So I think that's overplayed a little. There will be they might have a little bit more personal motivation, but by and large, in terms of team personnel, etc., that's a little different. Like, we know what Salzburg are going to come with. It's going to be the 4-2-2-2 all the way, and they are going to play attacking football. And Erling Haaland has been, he's caught a lot of headlines. Obviously, we all know his dad from his Premier League days, but he's in red-hot form, absolutely remarkable, with 17 goals in the last 10 games. Some remarkable stats, like his opening day against Genk was remarkable. First three shots, a hat-trick. There's so many stats. I'm not even going to bore you with that, but he has been suffering from a lung infection, and he's only recently been confirmed that he will be fit and ready to go, but it's going to struggle to see him to be fully fit. That being said, there's multiple attacking options throughout the team, so he is one of many players that Liverpool will need to keep an eye on. But you'd hope that Liverpool will have this reaction, will grab the game, stranglehold of the game, and be able to push on and get an important 3 points.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Jonathan. That was Jonathan Higgins, sports broadcaster and journalist, previewing Liverpool's game tonight against Salzburg at Anfield. Obviously, Liverpool looking to bounce back after their opening game defeat against Napoli in the group stage, and hoping to get back to winning ways in the Champions League. Obviously, 7 from 7 in the Premier League to start the season. Liverpool looking for their first Champions League win of this year's group stages to get off and running. That's Liverpool against Salzburg at Anfield tonight. It's an 8 o'clock kickoff. Up next, we're going to be looking back a little bit at last night's games. Manchester City beat Dinamo Zagreb by 2-0. Goals from Raheem Sterling and Phil Foden gave Manchester City their second win in 2 games in this year's group stages. So we'll be talking about all things Manchester City next.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. We're going to continue looking back at last night's Champions League action. We've already talked about Tottenham 2, Bayern Munich 7. We're going to look at the fortunes of the other English side in action. Much better for them. Manchester City made it 2 wins from 2 after an opening game win against Shakhtar Donetsk. They beat Dinamo Zagreb by 2-0. Raheem Sterling and Phil Foden both getting on the score sheet. On Love Sport Breakfast with Richard Lee and Patrick Christie's, they were joined by Andy Hampson, PA football writer for the North West. And they started by asking him what his thoughts were on City's performance last night.
I thought they played fairly well, to be honest, really. I mean, they had a bright start, and they created enough chances to get the game won in the first half an hour, really. they probably should have done. But I think, Aguero was just having one of those nights. He had a couple of good chances. He had a goal disallowed as well. Bernardo Silva had a couple of good chances. Ilkay Gundogan hit the bar. And they really, judging on what they've suffered so far at the hands of VAR, they probably should have had a penalty as well for handball. I thought at the start of the second half, they were starting to look a little bit laboured, perhaps the first 10 minutes or so. But then Guardiola obviously saw that, introduced Sterling at exactly the right time. He was brilliant. He changed the pace of the game immediately. A couple of good runs. He was troubling the Zagreb defence straight away. And then he scored the goal that broke the deadlock. And then, it was just plain sailing for City after that, really. And then they got the second goal right towards the end with another great ball by Sterling, played in Foden, and another excellent finish from him.
I want to talk about both of those players. Actually, I want to talk about Riyad Mahrez as well, because his form has been exceptional this season. Has anything changed from last season?
I think it has, really. I mean, he's just... I mean, Guardiola was speaking about this last weekend. I think defensively, he's certainly increased his work rate. He works really hard off the ball all the time. He doesn't stop running. And then when he's got the ball, I mean, we know the talent he's got. We saw it at Leicester. He's getting... he just seems a more confident player. He's getting more of the ball, and his delivery is absolutely superb. He really does the business. And I think you have to give a lot of the credit to that to Guardiola, who does seem to have a wonderful talent of getting the best out of players. Certainly players that want to work with him, he does improve them. And we've seen that with Sterling and other players in the past as well.
Well, that's who I want to touch on next, is Sterling. Another goal. In fact, his 18 goal involvements in the last 16 home Champions League games for Sterling, 11 goals, 7 assists. And seemingly we're talking about him on this show pretty much daily at the moment. Where does he rank in terms of the world's best at the moment? Is it fair to enter him into that category?
I think he's got to be right up there. I mean, I'm not sure quite how high he is, really, when you've got players like Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo, who always seem to be the best two players in the world. But he's certainly got to be, in the top handful of players. I mean, City have got other wonderful players as well. Kevin De Bruyne, of course, for instance, and Sergio Aguero. They're also two great players. But, yeah, Sterling belongs up there, and you can see him. He's improved year on year, as I say, with the City since Pep Guardiola arrived. And he's continuing to improve. I can see him getting better and better. And one day he could win the World Player of the Year. He's certainly talented enough.
Pep was quite apologetic in regards to Phil Foden, and obviously touched on the number of world-class players that are ahead of him at the moment. So naturally, it is going to be tough for Phil Foden to get all that much game time. However, he did come on and he bagged himself a goal. Is it a case of Phil Foden, the realisation that this will just be another season whereby he gets the odd cup game, and it might be that he gets 15, 20 games by hook or by crook, and that it might then be next season that he really kicks on?
It does seem to be that way, yeah. And Pep's been... He does like to talk him up. He described him in the summer as being, one of the best players he's ever seen, and, coming from somebody who's coached Messi, I mean, that is quite a compliment. Yeah, and people would like to see more of him. People have been talking about Foden for a number of years now. He's very highly rated. But yeah, as you say, there are other great players playing in his position, and he's going to have to bide his time. He did speak to the club's in-house TV last night. He was asked about this, but he said he was very happy to bide his time. It was a case of being patient. We've seen Kevin De Bruyne get injured. If more injuries happen, I think more opportunities will come for him. But otherwise, if they don't, he probably is going to have to wait a little bit longer. But this time next year, David Silva won't be around anymore. He is viewed as a natural successor to David Silva. And once he leaves, I think he is in good position to step up.
A lot been made of the centre-back issues that Man City have currently. Obviously, a couple of injuries. How will Pep deal with that in the coming weeks, do you think?
Well, Fernandinho has slotted in there. He's looked... a good replacement for John Stones. I think he will continue there. Although we do wonder at his age whether he can play two or three games a week. He's got some very good youngsters, Eric Garcia and Taylor Harwood-Bellis, in reserve. We saw them in the game at Preston last week. They look pretty good. They play very well. They're spoken highly of in the academy. I think they will get some opportunities, but at the moment, I think he's quite happy with Otamendi and Fernandinho. They do seem to look good together. Fernandinho is a competent centre-back. He's obviously not the top level But at the moment, I think City think they can get through this little period, and they're hoping after the international break, John Stones will be ready to return.
And in terms of balancing the squad, and you know, I've got no doubt that Pep Guardiola, given that the Champions League with City has eluded him, no doubt this will be a focus for him. So far, how's he balanced the squad in terms of league games, cup games, and obviously the Champions League games as well?
Well, I think he's done it very well so far. I mean, the scene hasn't gone perfectly. Obviously, they slipped Norwich a couple of weeks ago, and they did drop points against Tottenham earlier in the season. But he's always juggled it fairly well throughout his time. So these injuries don't help to the centre backs, and Leroy Sane is another big miss. But he's got plenty of talent in that squad, and we've seen Sterling was on the bench last night. He does know how to rotate the squad and get the best out of players. So I don't think he's got anything to worry about, really. He's gone through these tough schedules before, and I think they're well equipped to deal with it.
That was Andy Hampson, PA writer for the North West, who joined Richard Lee and Patrick Christie's on Love Sport Breakfast every weekday morning from 6:30 until 10. One of the biggest things, takeaways from last night's game was Phil Foden. He came on in the 90th minute, scored Manchester City's second goal late on. He's played just 10 minutes of Premier League football. Pep Guardiola had a strange comment on him after the game in the press conference about how he had to apologise, how he's so sorry to Phil Foden for not giving him more minutes. This was a player that he said was the most technically gifted player he's ever worked with, which in itself is a ridiculous comment considering he's managed Barcelona and Bayern Munich, where he's arguably managed the greatest player of all time in Lionel Messi, who came through the Barca Academy just as and came into the first team as Pep Guardiola took over at Barcelona. But considering this kid is quite clearly so talented, it is very strange why he's not getting more minutes. And it doesn't matter who you're out there, and I know my mum will be very annoyed to hear, since she's a massive Manchester City fan, but Phil Foden, you have to ask the question, does he need to leave Manchester City? Should he follow Jadon Sancho's path to not necessarily Borussia Dortmund, but does he need to leave City? Is he good enough to play for a Champions League side in Europe? He is, and he's not getting that game time at Manchester City. City fans out there, call us on 0208 7020 558 to give your views on Phil Foden and what his future might hold. Looking ahead to tonight's Champions League action, we've already talked about Liverpool's game against Salzburg at Anfield tonight. That's an 8 o'clock kickoff. Another 8 o'clock kickoff over in France sees Lille take on Chelsea. Chelsea looking to bounce back after their opening game defeat against Valencia. One man that was in the headlines for the wrong reasons on the field in that game was Ross Barkley after he missed the penalty. He's also been in the headlines this week for the wrong reasons again off the field after an incident on Sunday night in a taxi incident. Earlier on the Breakfast Show, David Chidgey from the Chelsea Fancast show every Friday from 7 till 8 joined Rich and Patrick, and they started off by asking him about the Ross Barkley taxi incident.
Yeah, storming a taxi cab. I mean, yeah. who hasn't dropped their kebab and a load of chips in a cab on a Friday night?
Yeah, but I've always paid for it, to be fair. I've always paid the cleaning bill.
Well, Patrick, you do it on a regular basis here in the morning.
Yeah.
And we often find it in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm not a multimillionaire footballer in the public eye. Do you know what I mean?
So is it, I mean, Frank Lampard played it down. It sounds like they've had a conversation between the two, but he didn't seem overly bothered.
No, I think he's handled it well, as you would expect. I mean, you know, I must admit, I mean, here's the thing, Richard. You've played professional football recently. I'm a bit more, I have to be honest. I mean, I like a drink. It's well known I like a drink, but I'm not a professional footballer.
Yeah.
So I'm a bit concerned about players going out on the lash a bit, especially before a game. I mean, I know that there's recovery time and all that, but they're professional athletes. Is that an issue?
For me, yes, because it was like, I suppose the rule of thumb was, although in the contract you're not allowed to drink within 48 hours of a game, that's what the contract states, but really what tends to happen is if you've got a midweek game, you do not drink. It's a case of if you've got Saturday to Saturday games, that might be an opportunity whereby after the game on the Saturday night, you know you've got a week until your next game, and if the club are giving you a couple of days off, which sometimes happens, that's your opportunity. So I was a little bit surprised to read this, of course, given that they do have the game tonight, which I'm assuming he will play a part in.
Well, who knows? I mean, the thing about Ross is that he's not been an automatic starter this season. And it's an interesting discussion that's been going around a lot of Chelsea supporters, really. A lot of us are very, you know, I like Ross. I loved him when he broke through to the England side when he was an 18-year-old. I think there's a hell of a footballer in there. But it's just not clicking for him at the moment. And with, when we've got players like Ruben Loftus-Cheek coming back from injury, we've got Mason Mount in there. One wonders if he's in danger of losing his chance. You know, so in a sense, he kind of needs to pull his finger out. I also wonder, Richard, if that's why, you know, the whole brouhaha about the penalty in the last round against Valencia when he seemed to grab the ball and take it himself. I wonder if that's because he's feeling the pressure to make an impact and wanted to, you know, try and cement his place a bit.
Yes, fair point. It was interesting listening to Frank Lampard yesterday because I thought he played it brilliantly in the press and that he laughed it off. Oh, he hasn't committed a crime. We all like a drink. I reckon when he saw him privately, I do think he'd be fuming. I do, because I think that it's just not a good look. It's a case of, like you say, he is battling for that starting place. You have got a game midweek. It's just not a good look on the club. So I think he's played it very, very well in the press. But my guess is that privately, he will have given Ross Barkley an earful. Want to move on and talk a little bit about Mason Mount, because look, before the season, there were a lot of question marks over the likes of Tammy Abraham, Mason Mount. Could they do it at this level? Are you surprised with just how well Mason Mount's done?
Well, I'm surprised to a degree because, you know, hitherto, none of the talented youngsters, even when they got a very limited chance, seemed to be able to make an impression. And what's impressed me most about Tomori in particular, actually, but Tomori, Mount and Abraham, is that they don't look overwhelmed, they don't look out of their depth, they don't look phased at all. In fact, that they've grabbed the chance and they look like they've been playing for Chelsea for years. And the other thing that I love, and what we're actually seeing on the pitch now, is that these guys have played in the same team from the age of about 8, and it looks like it. They look really comfortable, and they look comfortable playing in the same team together. Honestly, the mood at Chelsea this season is just the diametric opposite to what it was last season. Everybody's so positive and happy. It's brilliant to see. And a lot of it's down to these guys.
Yeah, well, look, absolutely. And you can actually feel that from being even outside the club, someone like myself. Like, that's exactly like what you just said there is not a shock. Like, it's exactly how it feels. And as a Manchester United fan, I look on in envy, of course. But how far can this particular Chelsea team go? Do you think we are going to be looking at this lot with potentially very few additions to this particular squad, maybe, in 2 years' time, challenging at the top?
Well, why not? I mean, the thing is that we've got Hudson-Odoi. He's just come back. And, of course, he, you know, broke through last year, got into the England side. Reece James got a game coming back from injury against Grimsby last week and looked a hell of a player. He's highly rated. We've got Loftus-Cheek to come back. He's probably the only one that's kind of broken through over the last few years. So there's a lot of them there. They've got a lot of talent. And we still have some experienced senior players as well. So, I mean, I actually think that if we can sort our defensive issues out at the moment, which is a real problem, leaking far too many goals, if we can sort that out, then I don't see why we can't challenge for a top four place this season. And as you said, in a couple of years down the line, add a few more world-class players, who knows?
Mm. Well, you did keep a clean sheet, of course, at the weekend. How important was it for Lampard to get that first Premier League win at home?
I think it was interesting, actually, which was more important, the clean sheet or the home win. I mean, obviously, you would say the home win because, you know, if he had failed to win against Brighton, then it just, you know, it brings everything on a bit of a downer. So it was great to see that first home win of the league. But I think the clean sheet was also important. And I think particularly for Kepa. I mean, you and I have talked a lot about Kepa over the last year or so. And I think he's a great keeper. But I do sometimes wonder about his authority in the box and his confidence. So the fact that he managed to keep a clean sheet, I think, will do wonders for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And just touching on the game tonight, how do you see it playing out?
Well, it's really hard to call, I think. I mean, Lille, I think, are the weakest team in the group. Ajax beat them 3-0 last time out. They've got some interesting players, actually, with some Chelsea connections. Loic Remy plays for them. Mm-hmm. Timothy Weah, who is George Weah's son, he plays for them. And they've got Renato Sanchez and Jose Fonte. So, I mean, you know, you look on paper and you think, well, Chelsea should beat that side. But they are very, very pacey up front, which, you know, is also a vulnerability for us on the counter-attack. And I think, you know, we need to be less naive than we were against Valencia. I thought Valencia did a brilliant, classic European job of mugging the team off, you know, fall over a lot, get one goal, you know, shut up shop. Very clever. So I think Chelsea need to wise up and learn quickly. But I'm confident, as ever, I'm going to go for 2-1 Chelsea.
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. We're going to be talking a bit more now about the Premier League, and to talk all things Aston Villa, we're going to talk to Max Stokes now from the Villa on Tour YouTube channel. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Max. It was a 2-2 draw at home against Burnley last time out. Did it feel like a massive opportunity missed? Does it have that feeling of maybe even a loss, considering Aston Villa put themselves in a position twice to go and win that game?
Yeah, 100% it was an opportunity missed. I think if you take the lead, especially twice in a Premier League game as a newly promoted side, you're going to be massively disappointed if you throw it away. And we did. I think the second one, especially the second goal, you know, we went up the other end and scored. John McGinn 10 minutes ago. And then literally 2 minutes later, we were all still celebrating. And Burnley go and pop in what was quite an easy goal, you know, a ball whipped in from the right-hand side and they just head it in from about 2 yards out. So, yeah, it's really disappointing. The performances are there this season, they really are. It's just, you know, we're conceding these silly, silly goals, mistakes are costing us. And yeah, as you said, it is a massive opportunity wasted, especially when we took the lead twice in that game.
What's your view then, Max, on VAR? Now, everyone has a view on it, and it feels like potentially Aston Villa have been harshly treated by it this season. My mind casts back to a game at Selhurst Park where Villa were on the receiving end of a dodgy decision that cost them a point in that game. Obviously, there was a bit of VAR controversy or goals ruled out for Villa on the weekend. Are you sold by it and do you think it should continue, because there have been so many mistakes made by it this season?
Yeah, there has been, and unfortunately, it's not working as well as a lot of people would have hoped this season already. I think the offsides, I don't really have a massive problem with the offsides. You know, it's black and white offsides. And, you know, you look at Son against Leicester when Aurier's goal was disallowed. That was extremely tight. I know the Horahan goal. No, the Horahan assist to McGinn for the first goal, which was disallowed for Villa against Burnley. That was disappointing. But in the crowd, I think, is where it doesn't work, because we've got no idea what's going on. The screens at Villa are dreadful. You don't know what's going on. It doesn't come up on the screen. The announcer doesn't tend to say anything. So in terms of fans in the ground, it doesn't really work for me. The subjective ones are where it doesn't work. I think that the VAR operators are reluctant to overturn the actual referee's decision. You saw it with towards the end of the Arsenal game where Socrates handballed it. For me, I think that's a handball, absolutely. I think even all the pundits on Match of the Day, etc., they were saying, no question about it, that's a handball. And I just think these VAR people make up a lot of excuses just to go with what the referee says. And I'd be much happier if, you know, referees, like they did in the World Cup last year, if they looked at screens, they went to go and look at the screen once a, you know, decision had to be made. And all the VAR person has to do is say, you know, look, John Moss or whoever it is, go and look at the screen. You may need to, you know, review your decision on this. Because then they're not directly overturning the actual referee. They're just saying you may have missed something. So it doesn't work brilliantly at the moment. You know, offsides, yes, it does. But overall, I don't think it's worked at all so far. But it may work in the future. Maybe give it a couple more months. Maybe review some of the rules. But yeah, at the moment, it's not fantastic.
Looking ahead then to the weekend on Saturday, Villa travel to Carrow Road to take on Norwich, whose form has been a little bit indifferent. They had that amazing result against Manchester City on that Saturday night football at Carrow Road, but it's been a little bit indifferent. Team with Pukki perhaps not showing the form he was earlier in the season. How do you view this game? Obviously, two promoted sides going up against each other. Is this a game where you think if we can take a point away from there, that would be a good result? Or realistically, should Villa be targeting 3 points? And is that a realistic aim?
It's a tough one. If we were talking about this, you know, 3 or 4 weeks ago, I would be petrified going to Carrow Road. But in the last couple of weeks, I've had some poor results going to Burnley, losing 2-0. I know Burnley are a good side, but even still, losing away at Crystal Palace 2-0. Where are the goals coming from? Has Pukki dried up a little bit? I think he has. You know, all the hype that he had at the start of the season was justified. I think he was fantastic. But now, hasn't scored in a couple of games. Norwich themselves as a team haven't scored. So, you know, I think we should be looking at this game and thinking we need to win. We've won 1 out of 7 so far this season. But then again, Norwich will be thinking, Villa at home, we should be winning this game. So it's a really tough one to call. But, you know, I think we're playing Norwich at a decent time. Like I said, if this was 3 weeks ago, I would not be confident at all, especially going to Carrow Road. But now I think Villa are starting to score a few more goals. I know Wesley still isn't firing exactly, but I think I'm a little bit more confident now going to Carrow Road. I think Norwich aren't firing, like I said. I think our defence is decent, apart from, you know, the Burnley and Arsenal game that we've recently played. But I'm a little bit confident. I think we really do need to start winning games. I think this is a perfect way to do it. And I do fancy us to get the win on Saturday against Norwich.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Max. That was Max Stokes from the Villa on Tour YouTube channel, looking ahead to Villa's trip to Carrow Road, two of the promoter sides up against each other, Norwich versus Aston Villa on Saturday afternoon. We're coming towards the end of the Premier League fan show, looking ahead to tonight's Champions League action. Two English sides in action. Liverpool at home to Salzburg and Chelsea travel to Lille. Barcelona against Inter Milan, a big game at the Camp Nou. Valencia take on Ajax. Genk take on Napoli. Slavia Prague against Borussia Dortmund. RB Leipzig versus Lyon and Zenit St. Petersburg against Benfica. That's all to come in the Champions League tonight.
This is Love Sport.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.